What's good, Dadcast Nation? Hey, welcome to the Dadcast Podcast. I'm your host, Lavelle Lemonnier, and on behalf of myself and my lovely wife, Dr. Gabrielle Lemonnier, who is the co-creator of this show, I want to thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Hey, listen, we've got an amazing show in store for you today. When I say amazing, I mean truly amazing. Today's guest is internationally recognized and is known as America's R&B historian. He is originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, and now lives in the Southern California area. He is, listen to this, folks, he's a two-time, not one time, but two-time Hollywood African prestigious award winner. He's a leadership and legacy winner, award winner as well, and he has numerous other awards to his credit. You from the acclaimed TV One show Unsung. He is an accomplished actor, author, and TV and radio personality. Please help me welcome to the Dadcast Podcast the one and only Mr. Tyrone Dubois. Hello, sir.
Well, greetings and salutations to you. And let me be the first person here to wish your lovely wife a happy birthday. Want to make sure that I'm the first one that does that here on your podcast. So that way I get good marks with her. That's the most important.
Thank you so much. I'm sure she will definitely be appreciative of that. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with me and with the Dadcast Podcast Nation. We are certainly looking forward to you about the things that you've accomplished and that you are doing and that you will be doing in the future. Given that information, let me say your career has been just excellent. Everything I've looked at, your career has been of the highest standard, and I really appreciate your craft and all that you've given to your craft and to your audiences. And talking about a remarkable career like yours, can you tell our viewers just a little bit about the beginning? I know there's somebody that's pretty influential in your journey career-wise, Now, how does a guy come from Cincinnati, Ohio to Hollywood and be successful?
Well, let me begin, first of all, by thanking you so much for the great compliments, as well as, once again, another opportunity here to be on your show. One of the things that helped me a great deal was the dream of wanting somehow or another to be something different. I wasn't sure what it was. But, you know, when you grow up, you somehow or another just try to find your way, even when you know, you're not quite sure what your way is. And so as a child in Cincinnati, Ohio, I would listen every Saturday to Casey Kasem's American Top 40. And it would be 20 songs on Saturday and then 20 on Sunday. And I was riveted to this man because not only did he tell the charts of the countdown, but he told the stories about the artist as well and where their position was. And that, I don't know, somehow or another, I really grabbed a hold to that. And that really made me feel a kinship with somehow or another believing that music could very well be the path in which I took to some degree. Wasn't sure what it was going to be, but it was a big influence on my life dealing, you know, with Casey Kasem.
Right. Well, that's remarkable. I definitely remember his show, and I remember being enamored by his personality and by his ability to deliver the content the way that he did. So I'm sure many of our listeners can remember his show as well. So Cincinnati, Ohio, let's go back a little bit into Cincinnati. Did you have would you consider yourself to have a normal upbringing in Cincinnati? Were things normal? Was it something, you know, big that happened in your life?
I to be perfectly honest, and I love sharing, you know, my honesty with people. My upbringing wasn't really all that great. My mom did her best, and I think that was the most important thing I could really say. I have had to struggle, I guess, to some degree of just trying to figure out where I belonged, where I was. You know, I didn't really have a lot in life, which is, ironically enough, one of the things in which I spoke with someone about today. It's I'm not impressed by things. Things don't really get to me more than just the substance of people, more than I do the language of buying things or having things or owning things. So that's never really impressed me much because I never really had a lot of things as well. I remember wanting to play baseball and I'm left-handed. My mother couldn't afford to buy me a glove. So I had to learn how to use, you know, the left-hand glove in my right hand so I'd be able to play baseball.
Right. That's funny that you mentioned that. I think I was born either right-handed or ambidextrous. I kind of, you know, was doing things both ways. At 5 years old, I broke my collarbone and I started having to do everything left-handed. And so then I just went primarily left-handed, became my dominant side. Same thing with baseball. It's ironic that you mentioned that. Yes. But things in life will steer us in the way that we should go, I imagine.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Lavelle. I think I really wasn't sure where I belonged. The simple things for some people were difficult for me because I never really had it simple. I don't think I realized that until I got older. I don't think it was something that I guess I laid conscience to, you know. We just kind of go along to get along and we just move along with the things in which we have.
Now, how did you get out of Cincinnati? What did life do to get you out of Cincinnati?
I had an uncle that lived here in Los Angeles. I wanted to play baseball. And I had an uncle who lived here in Los Angeles. And I moved out here on a whim and just said, I just want to see something different. And I came out here and my first job was being a ambulatory person. I had to learn the city of Los Angeles and take ambulatory people to, you know, doctors or, you know, hospitals. And that helped me to learn my way around LA. And that was the job in which, right, I had for a couple of years. And then I went on to do tiling. And then from there, you know, warehouse work, but the radio aspect of my life never left me. And public access was a big deal then in the early 80s, and particularly in cable. And I started doing a cable television show in Gardena, and I was doing a cable show. And that helped me to get better in speaking, being able to interview people and things of that nature.
Now, you could not buy that voice that you have. That voice is just undeniable. It's the crown jewel. And I'm sure that that has been with you since you came out of puberty, probably, and developed into this baritone voice of yours.
You know, ironically enough, my mother used to say this voice was going to make me a lot of money or get me in a lot of trouble. And my publicist has said not to comment on either. believe it or not, I think the baritone voice came as I got older. It didn't come right away. More soprano than baritone for a long time. But as time went on, as I got older, it got better. And the better it became, and you know, then you become someone that that's known for your voice. And I'm forever grateful for that.
Great. Who are some of the influential people in your life? I know you mentioned Mr. Casey, of course, as far as your career, but just in general, who are some of the most influential people you say in your life?
I would say in my, when you're younger and when you don't have a lot in life, you look to heroes that you see on the screen, in movies, or, you know, my great grandfather was a good influential person, I would say, to some degree. But I think the movie Rocky really changed a lot about who I was. I was a teenager when I went to see the first Rocky then. And I remember going to see that movie with a date. And I remember it was the first time. The story itself didn't mean much, but it was the fact that this guy kept getting pummeled to the ground and somehow or another, he kept getting back up. And that really made a big influence in my life. I remember the person that I took on the date, about, she said, "Oh my God, he's getting beat up bad." But I remember saying, "But he won't quit." And I remember that movie like it was yesterday, like I was in the theater then. And it made a big influence on my life.
I'd say it is. I definitely think that the tenacity that he showed, that's one of my favorite all-time movies. The tenacity that he showed, that attitude of never giving up, being the underdog, you know, all those qualities came through that franchise of movies. But you, especially with being a survivor, if you don't mind talking about that, you have that tenacity to just be the survivor that you are. I think our audience would benefit from hearing a little bit about that.
Yeah. As time went on here, I was totally just trying to find my way. I got my first job actually in radio, real radio, at 42 years old. And I had to drive, and you live here, so you know where that is. I would drive from my job in Culver City and would drive 145 miles to Barstow. And, wow. And driving in Barstow, I would be on the air from midnight to six. So I had a full-time job, and then I would drive from Culver City to Barstow every other weekend, be on the air from midnight to six for the minimum wage. And, but I wanted to be in radio so bad, I was willing to do, you know, whatever it takes. Somebody said yes when, and that mattered to me. It was all I had at that point.
Right. That's great. That's something our listeners can learn from, especially a lot of our young listeners who are out there trying to find their way. Just understanding that everything doesn't come, you know, in a microwave type of element. Sometimes we have to, you know, go through some things that we're not comfortable with to get to where we want to be. So
yeah, and I definitely can. Yeah, thank you. I was going to say, and particularly for the people out there who are listening who are young, you know, your job or your charge in life is to find what it is in which you want to do. But before you can find what you want to do, you need to know who you are as a human being first. And I sort of went around a lot of so many of the shortcomings in which I've had in my life so backwards. And I think it's helped me a great deal in being able to figure out that no matter what was said or done, I was going to make this work one way or the other, even if it meant that I was going to do it alone. I was going to make it work because it was all I had.
Right. Right. That's amazing. Let's talk about Hollywood for a moment. You know, our viewers, we view more than 14 countries. A lot of our viewers are just spellbound by Hollywood. They think of the glitz and the glamour of Hollywood. And, is Hollywood really what it's pumped up to be in your estimation?
Well, I'll be honest, you know, because I am pretty grounded. The truth of the matter is it's made to look as though it's a place to be, but unless you have a plan, it's really no different than the place you live. People walk the streets all day, and you know, it's no different than the average place. The only difference between Hollywood and where others live are dreams. You know, people dream of Hollywood and somehow or another believing that they have what it takes to be, you know, the next star or something of that nature. But I'm always grounded in who I am and what I do. And to be perfectly honest, I just go there more for work than I do for anything else.
Right, right, right. Yeah, Hollywood definitely has its ups and downs. You know, dreams are broken or made. That's what we say all the time in Hollywood, just like the Big Apple, New York.
Yes,
but it takes some stick-to-itness in order to, you know, make those dreams come to reality.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Now, let's talk about your book. Tell our viewers about your book. I mean, this book has been doing great. I think it was number one on Amazon 2 times, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes, it was. And I remember being at a red carpet event, and I was talking to a publicist. And I was asking her how I could get to some sense of another level for myself. And it was the last red carpet before COVID.
Okay.
And I remember her saying, Tyrone, you're already legitimized as an R&B historian, but she said that a book would solidify you. And so I really quite wasn't sure how she meant that or, you know, how that was supposed to work. But I said, okay, I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to write it based upon what I believed were my top 10 picks of artists over the last, you know, four decades. And I called it the four seasons of R&B because the truth is the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s were the highest points of R&B music. So I called it the four seasons of R&B. And R&B wasn't the same before the 60s and haven't been the same after the 90s.
That is absolutely correct. I agree with you. I read through your book, and I want to say it's an excellent read. Very, it moves along very well. I enjoyed it from front to back. It's an excellent, excellent read. I definitely advise and suggest our viewers that they go out and get your book. Especially if you're a music lover, you definitely have to read this book. Now, let's talk about the book for a moment. You list Michael Jackson as number three. Now, I'm saying that with some emphasis, I actually agree with your pick. But many of our viewers and a lot of music lovers out there would debate your pick. You list Michael Jackson as number three, and you list Prince as number one. Is that correct?
That is correct. But here's what a lot of the people need to know. Remember, Michael Jackson was the king of pop, not of R&B. Michael Jackson was, right, well, you know, on the R&B, on the pop charts, he was the king of pop, but he wasn't the king of R&B. Now, what's unique about that is he did well on the R&B charts, but Stevie Wonder, by the way, who was sandwiched in between him and Prince, actually did just barely a little better. But the truth of the matter is, Michael Jackson on the pop, on the R&B charts, he did well. But on the pop charts is what he's known for. He's the king of pop. Right. He's the king of pop. Right. And, you know, the other national R&B charts pretty much seem to agree to some degree, but a little bit of variance to on a few of them. But generally speaking, on the R&B charts, Michael Jackson was considered number three. Stevie Wonder was, remember, there was a big gap with Michael Jackson in between his song, you know, Michael Jackson's Thriller, you know, and Off the Wall. I mean, I'm sorry, Off the Wall, and then Thriller, and then Dangerous. I mean, his whole album, Black and White, all of those, he had three. Stevie Wonder had more top 10 singles than Michael Jackson did on the R&B chart than Michael Jackson. And as far as Prince is concerned, When Doves Cry was the number one song of the year in the year of 1984.
Right. Yeah, so, Prince definitely, to me, number one artist of all time.
And just so your viewers know, it really wasn't even close. Prince was, had ran away with it based on the point system of the Billboard charts by a long shot. He had ran away with it, not just in, you know, I mean, with the Batman and, I mean, all the other things in which he did. I mean, he was huge.
Right. Now, you guys, did you have a chance to meet those artists?
You're going to have to say it. It says that your network bandwidth is low. That's what it's saying. So I couldn't hear you.
Did you get a chance to meet your any of those top three artists?
I actually met Stevie Wonder recently. I never did get a chance to meet Michael Jackson or Prince, but I can tell you that of the book that I heard from quite a few artists who either agreed or disagreed with my picks. One artist was really upset, but what he didn't understand was that he kept saying he did well on the pop chart, and therein lies the problem. He did great on the pop chart, but the R&B charts, he wasn't even in the top 50. And right. So, I mean, and ultimately, I think that's where a lot of people, you know, needed to learn and understand. My book was based on the R&B charts only, not the pop charts. Like for example, the Jackson 5 had only had five number one songs on Billboard's pop chart, But the one that was missing, Mama's Pearl, only went to number two on the pop charts. And One Bad Apple jumped over them in the year of 1971. But on radio and records, it went to number one on radio and records. So I credited the Jackson 5 for all of their number ones. And in fact, I did that for all of the songs. I did it for all of them.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. And again, if people read your book, they'll get some background information about the different charts and how those chart systems work. Some excellent information. Let's talk about you in that this industry that you're in with the advent of social media and being able to reach out to artists directly and get them, you know, get their feedback on social media, things like that. How do you keep reinventing yourself and staying relevant in this ever-changing music industry?
Lavelle, that's a really good question. One of the things that I learned, particularly when I was doing Unsung, is that people kept saying that they were a music historian. And I have learned all the time that nobody ever hires you because you're better. They usually hire you because you're different. And so what I wanted to do was have the moniker of being an R&B historian instead of a music historian, because then it allowed me to be the one person who says I specialize in the charts and the history of R&B. And for months such as Black History Month or Black Music Month, although all of these music historians are really good, but the fact that I monikered myself as an R&B historian allowed me to be the go-to guy that people would come to if in the event that there was some sense of news. And the other part of that reinvention aspect was you have to figure out what makes you different than everyone else to some degree. And I had to do the same studying as everyone else. And for me, it was the charts. I knew the R&B charts like the back of my hand. And part of that I learned from Casey Kasem. When he knew, you know, when I would listen to him every week, although he didn't do the R&B charts, he did, they called it then, it was the Black charts and the Soul charts. They turned it to R&B in the late 80s. But once I learned the charts of R&B, then people started recognizing, okay, this guy is different. Didn't make me better, but you have people always, to some degree, always try to find a sense of relevance. I've learned that relevance means that you're only trying to figure out a way to survive or last. But if you reinvent yourself, you have to be able to tell people what makes you different. And different usually always gets you what you want. And, you know, I've also learned the art of humility. I mean, this stuff could all be gone in a day. So be kind to everyone and be a giver and help out other people. And, you know your craft. If this is what you want to do, a man years ago said, Tyrone, what do you do? I said, I do radio, I do television, I do voiceovers. But then he asked me again, but what do you do? And I remember not having much to say. And he said, you don't know what you want. And then he said, the next time someone asked you that question, you better have an answer. And he walked away. And Lavelle, I can tell you that I could not sleep for days because I knew he was right. And then I said, I knew the pop charts actually better than I knew the R&B charts, but I needed to make a decision. Which way did I want to go? And when I decided the R&B charts, I knew right then that that was going to be my niche.
You definitely for yourself. It's evidence with the success of your career. Now, here's a big question that I have for you. The pop culture and the hip hop culture, which, by the way, if we go back, you know, to the genesis of hip hop, I don't think anyone anticipated hip hop taking off and becoming as mainstream as it has and being able to sustain itself for so long. So given the pop culture and the hip hop culture and their rise to fame, so to speak, their stick, the power that they have to, you know, stay in the mainstream. Would you say that R&B
I would say that R&B has changed forever. One of the problems is that in order to become a group, it requires that three people or maybe four or five people have to feel and do the same thing. back in the days you had an A&R person or a strategic person or a studio person. And there, you know, there was a sense of structure to people when they were doing, you know, groups and things of that nature. You were groomed some kind of way. But now you can basically do a song right here in your home or in your garage or in a studio or something. And somehow or another, you've eliminated the middleman with the A&R and all of that, because social media now has taken the dominant aspect of that. And by you being able to do that on your own, you've cut out a lot of money, a lot of issues, a lot of problems, a lot of legalese, and now you can be able to make it on your own. The problem is being able to get three or four people to say or feel the same way. This is the very reason why old school artists are still around and relevant today, because people long very much for the days of old when you can get four or five people to do the same thing. But as far as R&B is concerned, and a perfect example of that is this year's Grammys don't have one single R&B group, not one. And in fact, haven't had an R&B group in years because they don't exist. Old school R&B artists still exist, but there is no such thing as a new R&B group. They just don't exist anymore because it requires, you know, everybody to want the same suit or, you know, hair being done or makeup being done. You know, you can't do it for just one. Now you got to do it for four or five people. And money doesn't, and the money that entails doing something of that nature in the sophistication of music has all totally changed now.
Well, how do you classify artists like her or Daniel Caesar or some of these?
Well, these are R&B artists. They're not R&B groups. Now, right. It doesn't mean, and there is a particular difference in the way in which we look at them. For example, Jill Scott's an R&B artist, but we label her and Erykah Badu and some of the others as neo soul, for example. Doesn't mean right. that these artists aren't in the R&B juncture, but so is Bruno Mars. So I'm saying at this point, there is no such thing as an R&B group, but what they've done is in R&B, they've got R&B as the main line, and then the subtitles or subculture of R&B include some of these artists such as Daniel Caesar and her and things of that nature.
Okay, that's excellent. That's some good information for our viewers to understand. And again, if you get a copy of this book, you'll get a good look at the R&B charts and the R&B system as it relates to R&B groups. So the last question I have for you is, what can we expect from Mr. Tyrone Dubois in the future?
Well, as we speak right now, I was just given the announcement to do a pilot show called Do You Know. It's based on a webisode series which I had years ago based on R&B history from the past. I've been working on it for the last couple of weeks. I just got the green light a couple of weeks ago, and so I'm working on a show of that nature. And ironically enough, I'm going to keep it, although it's called Do You Know, the first section of it, and I'll just make that here on your show, is going to be based on, I'll go, you know, here are the number one songs in the four seasons of R&B. And, you know, I'll pick an R&B artist from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s and talk a little about the artist, as well as have a couple of interviews on the show as well. So the pilot's being done right now as we speak. And I'm really looking forward to it. I feel like I've grabbed my niche. Like it took me a while to kind of figure out where I was headed and what I was doing, but staying faithful and staying kind and humble and recognizing that, you know, everybody has a journey and dream, and just be a giver. It means an awful lot to me. And the fact that you give me an opportunity to be on here just gives me the same opportunity.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being on here. You definitely have a very humble spirit, and you're very easy to talk to. I appreciate you as a person. And definitely, like I said earlier, your craft, it's amazing. The niche that you've carved out is perfect. We look forward to your show and to much more coming from you in the future. And we want to thank you for helping us to understand R&B and the R&B charts just a little more.
Sir, thank you very much. It's been my absolute honor. I truly, truly appreciate it. And I thank all of your listeners as well. If I can just say, they're able to get my book. It's only for $10. It's at Amazon. It's called The Four Seasons of R&B. It's been a number one book, as you mentioned twice. And I can't thank you enough for the wonderful opportunity of being on your show. And I can be reached at rmbhistorian.com.
rnbhistorian.com. Again, folks, Mr. Tyrone Dubois, he is America's R&B historian. We're so glad to have him. Make sure you tune in to some of our upcoming episodes of the Dadcast podcast. We have many more exciting celebrity interviews, but I don't know if we'll ever top one as we've had today. This has been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much again. Dadcast Nation, we will be coming back at you next week with a new episode. And to all of our listeners, I'm going to tell you to remember, reach for the stars, and you'll always be successful. Thank you so much. I'm out. Peace.